important issue this quickly. So we appreciate you all making this a priority. Several members of our Afghan community, we're grateful that you're here as well. And I would like to introduce Azeem, who is our first SIB arrival from Afghan. And welcome your comments, and certainly if you'd like to provide input throughout the meeting, please do speak up.
Thank you very much. Maybe you can speak now or later.
You're welcome to introduce yourself. We'd love to hear from you.
I'm Azeem Tatayi, one of the Afghan refugees that arrived in here with the help of the U.S. Policy. And I'm here. Thank you very much, everybody. And my family is here on the way. They made Washington, D.C. there last night.
It's great news.
Thank you.
Welcome. We're so glad you're here.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Well, we are going to get started. Hopefully you all have an agenda in front of you. We're going to give a quick situation update, and then we'll turn some time to the governor to kind of set the stage and give some remarks. And what we're excited to hear about today is the work that's been done with some of the work groups. We know that last week, we knew less than we do this week. Last week, there was a lot of uncertainty, but our team has been meeting quite frequently with our federal contacts, as well as our resettlement agencies that are getting updated on the situation. And so we know just a little bit more this week. We don't have all the clear answers from the U.S. State Department and Office of Refugee Resettlement, but I just wanted to set the stage and let you know what we do know today. We know that about 122,000 people have been evacuated from Afghanistan since August 31st. And that includes about 60,000 vulnerable Afghans. Most of the evacuated Afghans are being processed at U.S. military bases, but about 22,000 are in transit to points across the U.S., which will take some time. The State Department has assured that all Afghan arrivals will have a security screening and go through a thorough vetting process when entering the United States. And then at the military bases as well, there'll be medical screenings and also vaccines provided. We've given each of you a handout that's in front of you that kind of describes a little bit more about this process, but we wanted to talk about the three main groups that will be coming as part of this resettlement process. There is the Special Immigrant Visa Group, or the SID group, which Azeem falls under that group. We also have refugees that are just in the middle of completing their visas as well, processing those that received humanitarian parole status to enter the United States. And then the third and largest group of refugees are parolees, which includes those without the SIV applications that were granted humanitarian parole to enter the country because of their vulnerabilities. So we can talk about more about that group, and that's one of the reasons why we wanted to meet and discuss some of the immediate needs, because we know that if people don't have the right refugee status, that there's limited resources and support available. We want to make sure that as a community and as an advisory board that we're talking about how we can meet those needs and be prepared. We think that there's an urgent need. We don't know that there's an emergent need yet, but I think this planning that we're all talking about today and that we've been talking about will be the right framework and the right platform to kind of make sure that there's that success. We don't know how many arrivals we'll yet receive. That's one area that we're unsure of at this time. We've been told that we should start receiving final destinations of refugees around October 1st, but that's always in flux. Obviously, you know, it's a fluid situation. And we'll continue to kind of keep this group apprised as we hear more information. We're meeting quite frequently, like I said, with the Office of Refugee Resettlement and the State Department. We have the governor's advisor to federal affairs is involved in this as well. And we've been coordinating with the resettlement agencies, and we'll call this group back together. Just provide an email update if we do receive more information. But that's really what we know today. So the agenda as follows will be remarks from the governor. Then we'll hear from the three work groups. Those are work groups around housing and medical needs, as well as basic needs and community support. And I just want to thank all of the work groups ahead of time. I know that there's been a lot of work that's gone into this, and we appreciate you putting that work together so the governor could hear from you. So With that said, Governor, we appreciate your support and the letter that you sent, which rallied a lot of interest in coming together and kind of seeing what support Utah could provide. So we'll turn the time to you.
Thank you, Casey, and welcome. Thanks to all of you for your incredible work on this issue and so many others. We're living in interesting and exceptional times, and I'm grateful that Utah is a place that cares deeply about others, and that we can continue to be a place of refuge for those who desperately need it. We've talked kind of about where we are in the unknowns right now, but we as always want to be prepared for whatever comes our way. And that's where you all fit in. I appreciate the work groups and the amazing work that has been done so far. As we continue to plan, we recognize that again, many of you have worked in this space for a long, long time, and we'll note that the conditions have changed a little bit here in the state. Housing's more expensive than it's ever been. And so that's going to present some unique challenges. But I just know the heart of our people. And I know that they will rise to whatever challenge we put before them. So many groups, faith-based groups, nonprofit groups, private sector that are all willing to come together and help with this. I will just tell you that when we sent our letter to the president, the response here locally was overwhelming. So many people just offering anything they could. Hotel owners saying that hotels will help what you need. And it's one of those things where we have to be careful when we ask for help, because we'll get all of it and more. And so we want to make sure that we have a great plan in place so that when we do call upon Utahns to step up, we know exactly what to tell them, and that they will respond. But I just believe that this is really a defining moment for our state, and it will help drive new perspectives and deeper compassion as we get to meet these families who are seeking a better life for themselves. And I'm grateful that we can be part of that. So thank you for your great work, and I look forward to hearing where we go from here.
Thank you, Governor. Okay. Well, we'll go to Nate McDonald and Pamela Atkinson. I believe they're going to report out on housing, one of our biggest challenges, and also some progress that Pamela's made on the medical front.
No, thank you. So quickly, we organized these work groups last week when this meeting was called. We pulled together a group for the housing work group. It consisted of Solid Housing Authority, Solid Housing Connect, Visit Salt Lake, the Apartment Association. We have Paul Smith here. Thank you, Paul, for joining us. And then also members from our Housing and Community Development Division with Department of Workforce Services, myself and Pamela. Quickly, we identified two, and I also can't forget our resettlement agencies participated. So thank you both, Natalie and Mark, for participating. So we quickly identified that the needs with housing, there's going to be a temporary short-term need and then more long-term permanent needs. And so we reached out to Visit Salt Lake, who they are the partner that works closely with really all of our hotel groups in the Salt Lake Valley. And Visit Salt Lake gathered their sales force and reached out to all the hotel groups to gather who are willing to have, to really just provide rooms in last minute situations. And if you think about the hotel industry, they're one industry that's been impacted the greatest from the pandemic, if you look at it from an economic standpoint. And so to have a number of these hotels step forward, only asking for, basic needs to be covered for housing and for cleaning and services, really a very minimal rate to cover those costs. We have about 13 hotels that stepped up, one of them offering a full floor to be used for refugees coming in, and a number of them stepping up and saying that they are willing to help provide short-term. So we feel comfortable about the short-term opportunity there. We also pulled together, Paul Smith represents the Apartment Association. Paul sent out to his association and to gather interest. Paul, you take 2 seconds and tell us which response you got.
Just dozens and dozens of operators are willing to work with this program and house refugees. And the outpouring has just been tremendous. And probably 20,000 units served. Well, the owners of 20,000 units, they're not all available. They're happy to provide what is available at the right time.
So one of the things we talked about is our approach on this. It's not, it wouldn't be beneficial for us. What's available today is not going to be available tomorrow or in 3 weeks or in a month. And so really knowing that we have a good solid group of landlords who are willing to participate is huge. These are landlords that some are participating already with refugee resettlement, but this is also a much larger group that are willing to help and support. And getting the information from the State Department, having advance notice, as much as we get, will be super helpful. That could also eliminate some of the short-term needs. And so we really talked about our strategy moving forward is not necessarily gathering units that are available now, but gathering the landlords that are interested in participating. And then as the need comes in, we mobilize and find what's available right then and there with the groups that have said they're interested. And so, we feel very comfortable in that, and that being a process that the resettlement agencies are comfortable with as well. We talked about the housing market. It is a crazy housing market. We all recognize that, and we know that that's going to be the biggest challenge is, and we know that we'll have greater participation with landlords if they know there's going to be funds and resources to pay for rent, because units will disappear just like that. We are providing a recommendation to utilize the Emergency Rental Assistance Program Round 2 that is provided right now by Treasury. We've gone over the eligibility criteria, and we believe that the parolees would meet the eligibility criteria for this program. We've also had our legal look at the requirements, both from ARPA and also the latest round of federal guidance, and our legal beliefs that it would fit. We have sent a question into the Treasury Department to just confirm that this would be an acceptable use of these funds. We are waiting to hear back from that. And we've asked Gordon, and Gordon Larson has also contacted his contacts. So utilizing those funds, we believe that this housing is, that would be a huge opportunity for us to eliminate one of the greatest barriers and of just not having the funds to cover it for this group, that this would be an acceptable use of those funds. So that's the recommendation that we're putting forward, that we use those funds. With that, that is really where we're at with housing, and we're very pleased with the response we've gotten so far from both the hotels and also the landlords. Emma?
A couple things with housing. We feel that it's so critical that we'll probably go ahead even if there isn't guarantees from the federal government. I think, you know, as we've talked about it, we're thinking about the clients. We're thinking about the fact of how traumatized they are, even more so than other refugees. And we feel we have to keep them in mind, and that's our priority. And, you know, we may have to raise some private funds just to start off with, but I think those in the federal government will finally understand what's at risk here and forgive us for going ahead without their permission.
I like the way you think.
And secondly, as Visit Salt Lake was reeling off the hotels and motels to be used, a red flag went up. And so I spent part of this morning trying to get the homeless group who are looking for overflow motels and hotels to make sure that they're coordinating and collaborating with Visit Salt Lake and not going after the same motels and hotels. So that's in motion, and we don't need to worry about that anymore. I was asked to look at a healthcare system for our refugee friends, because many of them are coming without access to Medicaid. They're coming without pocket money, they're coming without anything at all. no benefits whatsoever, those are what we're calling the humanitarian parolees. These parolees obviously have to have screening. If they haven't been vaccinated, if they've come outside the Air Force base system, then there'll have to be vaccinations and inoculations. But they all need screening with certain criteria set up by the federal government. They then will need referrals either to dental or to mental health. So that all has to be set in motion. When I started asking different people, different providers to get in involved, they said, absolutely not. We are so overwhelmed right now. We are understaffed. We are overworked. And there's no way that we can really help. And then others said, well, let's take a look at it, but I can't promise anything. So it was rather a gloomy start. So we spent time just talking with people one-on-one and then in groups. And at our meeting this week, certain people said, yes, we can help, we can help. And then I've had numerous emails and phone calls. And some of the things that have been set in motion already, Intermountain Healthcare has designated one of the school clinics that is in a building of its own and a provider. That will help tremendously for us to start off with. The Association of Community Health Centers, ACH, they've talked to all the CEOs of the community health centers, and we may be able to get some help from there. And we're keeping in mind, Governor, that we've got this short-term need for the screening, which has to happen within a certain number of weeks, as you know. But we're also looking at long-term, so that every Afghan refugee, like other refugees, will have a medical home. But giving, obviously, priority to the short-term, we also have from the Utah Department of Health, there's a clinic there that sees quite a few refugees already. In fact, about 80% of their patients are refugees. And I've had calls and emails from the medical director, from the chief administrative officer, and they really are offering to help. And so we went from plan A to plan B with part of plan C coming in. And it's all coming together rather nicely. It just needs a lot of organization and a lot of delegation to people who can make things happen. And then finally, an important part, of course, is physicians and mid-level providers who will do the actual screening. And so I talked with Michelle McComber. And tomorrow is the Utah Medical Association annual meeting. And she has an email from me in terms of bulleted out what we need. They will make an announcement during the first part of the meeting and then send around the sheets for people to sign up. And with my email address that they can send me questions. And then we talked about the retired physicians. And so a letter with this email is going out to all retired physicians in Utah, the ones particularly in the Salt Lake area, and those who are semi-retired, to ask them to volunteer, and then they'll have my contact information for questions. And then once we get that all organized and see who can give so many hours and how much we need them, we'll have to set up mid-level providers, and medical assistants, etc. And then we'll also need supplies. And so there's a lot of work for a lot of people to do, but it's coming together, and we're going to be pleased to have the extra days to get this all set up. But we want to take the stress off the two resettlement agencies. So our goal is that when refugees arrive, the resettlement agencies will know where there are openings, where to send people to, the transportation, and the translators. I have a call in to Major Turley to ask him if he would be willing to loan us some Afghan translators, because many of his Utah unit actually served over in Afghanistan, and they know how to speak Afghanistan. Knees, I think that's a great word. So it's all being set up. It's coming together, and the light at the end of the tunnel is not an oncoming train, but it's actual light. And I want to thank Asha and Haider from the Utah Department of Health, and Lisa Nichols, and everybody who's just come together to make this happen, and Alan from the OUCH organization. And it's like everybody is beginning to own a piece of all this. And I think to do that within a week has just been amazing. And it truly epitomizes the TEAM, the Together Everyone Achieves More. And I think that's what we want to do. And I just owe a debt of gratitude to everybody who stepped up to help.
Thank you, Pamela. I did have a question that came in while you were speaking, so to you and to also Nate. If you could clarify for the group, how many hotels and for how long would those be available? And then just if you could talk a little bit more about the funding that's secured to pay for the hotels and also for the landlord fees and rental costs and what those costs would look like.
So right
a little
now,
bit more around the ER too.
So right now with the timing and the length and needs, right now that is all still to be determined, right? It's going to be a case-by-case situation. Really the timing of how long a hotel would be needed for is going to be based upon what available units are available and how quickly we can get them into those units. And also the advance notification we get about the individual or family that is coming. If we have a week's notice, that gives us time to get more permanent housing secured. If it's a day's notice, there might be a night or two in a hotel, or a week, depending. And so the hotels we talked to has kind of set that expectation. It could be 1 to 2 nights, it could be a week, it could be maybe a little longer, depending on the situation and the timing of it. So right now we just have a group of hotels that understand those circumstances and are willing to participate and work on a case by case situation. And it's really the same thing with landlords. Emergency rental assistance is a treasury, program that was stood up for, COVID relief. There's two rounds, emergency rental assistance round one, which is more about providing services for people who were impacted financially due to COVID-19. Emergency rental round two is more about providing relief and rental assistance to individuals who have been impacted financially or had a hardship occur during the pandemic. And that's the key word, during. And there is some flexibility there where we believe we would be able to use this program. There is a guideline from Treasury that we would be able to secure new housing. So for individuals who do not have existing housing that meet the eligibility criteria. So with this group meeting the eligibility criteria, which we believe they do, we would be able to help secure future potential housing for up to 6 months. And then once they're established in that housing, we would obviously be able to work with them and get them moving forward beyond that, and potentially still use those funds beyond that period, but at least allows us to secure the funds for up to 6 months.
Great. Any questions for Nate or Pamela about housing and the medical side of things, medical screening?
Just a question.
Abdul.
I was reading that they require a valid agreement, rental agreement. The new refugees will not have a rental agreement. How is that considered in getting the assistance?
So, yeah, there is a section in the guidance that is for obtaining new housing. And that's the loophole for essentially it's the opportunity that the program allows you to, support people who are either experiencing homelessness or this would be their first housing opportunity. So the overall objective of the program, there is that rental agreement and that's the main objective of the program is to secure that. But there is this one area of guidance that gives us the ability to help people that this would be their new housing opportunity for them.
The second question I have was regarding the translation interpretation. A few years ago, I was sitting in a legal hearing and the translator, if I have an interview, would have made that person go to jail. So please be careful when you are contacting those interpreters and translators. The level of English is very limited, and it's now be careful if there is legal documentation to be translated, and you have to recheck that. And I'm willing to offer my help. If there is any documentation that needs to be translated properly, meaning quote unquote, I can do that. But please be careful when you are using those translated interpreters because they're limited.
Well, yeah, quick comment on
can,
the
can I just say, the question was, how will the lease work? We don't have it all worked out yet, but it's possible that the lease may be signed by the refugee agency with the landlord, so it's not in the arrivee's name, if that makes sense.
May I make a comment on this? So our organization, Utah specifically, is a partner with the county with the ERAD program. We're already providing rent assistance to our community. We actually have Asha as a partner as well. We have somebody coming here weekly to take applications from the refugee. We've created pathways of how do you create a temporary lease, how do you provide translation services, and we've been doing it since October. We did get some state funding to do as well, and that's why where the cultural competency helps. And so I would welcome anybody from the community who needs rental assistance. We have a process in place already.
Thank you, Luna. Okay. Any other questions?
I have a question. So we have Utah resident that were stuck in a situation in Afghanistan. And they were not new refugee. But when they brought up, they landed over Virginia. Without any money. So they reach out to our organization, we bother to apply. When they come over here, so obviously their stuff was in the storage unit. Now they don't have down payment, they don't have rent, they don't have jobs. So we help them, but how is those situations? Because I'm working with underground people in Afghanistan with all the allies that they bring them, there's many that are stuck over there. So when they bring them back here, whether they're going to the camp or they be released from the airport, what is the situation? How are we going to assist those? Because as of right now, all these few families that came, we funded them. And how are we going to, when they go to housing now, they say that, okay, they're not qualified for COVID relief either. So that is something that we are assisting right now, and we would like to know how we can get further assistance.
Yeah, so the emergency rental program and what you're currently working on is primarily set up for people who are here right now. So we will be establishing a new process for the new arrivals because this is the program is not set up for that yet. So we are going to be setting up a new process that will be for new arrivals who do not have that it'll be a new process. So we'll work together with you.
But there are like coming right now, we're funding them right now. How are we going to go about that? Like,
so I would suggest sending them to the Refugee Services Office.
We did. We did send them. They got rejected. We did send them to the relief program. They got rejected, so we fund them. And we bought the eight people one-time flights. And so they just come land over there. It's like, yeah, they don't get assistance.
Another issue we have to solve.
That's great.
On the agenda. Yeah.
They're not new refugees. They're returning. So they went
they're
on vacation.
They're permanent resident and citizen.
Oh, okay. And they returned back home. That's the situation.
I can reach out and follow up with you about those specific questions.
Thank you.
It sounds like that's a unique situation that we need to work through. So thank you for bringing that up.
Yes.
Okay. Let's move on to work group number two with Asha and Miles.
So, thank you. So for the basic needs work group, we recognize that the amount of things covered under basic needs is so many. So we actually broke our group down into three or four different areas. I'm going to talk about the targeted items and food, as well as the employment, Pamela talked about the medical piece, and then Miles, I'll turn it over to you to talk about the most important thing, money. So the targeted items and food, I connected with the LDS Church and the Utah Food Bank. They are already providing some of these basic needs items and have agreed that as the need emerges with more arrivals and parolees in particular, that they would be willing to help increase the resources that are available. There is a big need for culturally appropriate foods, and we're working on how we can better organize around providing some of those. As relates to employment, we do have a little bit of good news. We just got information from our legal counsel that we are able to provide employment support for parolees who have work authorization. So our job developers at the Refugee Center are ready and willing to provide that assistance. We know that, you know, employment is critical, and so we're working with the resettlement agencies to set up a pathway to put that in place. We also will be working with Horizonte to continue the ESL testing piece that we have in place so that we have some good information about English level and other opportunities. That's all I have to report.
Okay, on the monetary side, thank you, Asha, for your leadership and all that you're doing there. I want to make sure that Stephen Lefebvre is worked for Governor Cox for several years, joined the World Trade Center team a couple months ago, and is just doing absolutely phenomenal work. So Stephen, I'll give a few kind of high-level things, and then you jump in and correct me, because Stephen really is a touch point on this for us and is leading out to really incredible work across the community. On the private sector side, in terms of monetary support, I think there are two things that are absolutely certain. One, there's going to be significant need among the community, and two, there's going to be very, very strong willingness among the business community, community partners to donate funding. Our task and our challenge is to figure out how do we accomplish that, match the willingness to donate with the needs in a way that is accountable and transparent to those that are donating money. And then most importantly, this is as efficiently as possible getting to the points of need. That mechanism is something that we're going to have to continue to do some work on and figure out, because that is going to be absolutely essential. There will be some initial needs up front, and I think that we already have some very strong willingness on the private sector side to make some financial contributions. In order to keep that sustained moving forward, we're going to have to show this transparent and this accountability, and it's meeting the needs of the individuals that are coming here. And so that's something that we want to continue conversations with resettlement agencies. This is really technical work, and so we have to make sure that we are getting money. That's the easy part. The hard part is the work that the resettlement agencies are doing, which is matching the funding to the points of need. And so we need to make sure that we have a really good mechanism, that this is plugging in behind the leadership of the governor and the state and the resettlement agencies. And then Stephen's already going around town and raising some, getting a lot of good commitments. That part will be easy. The last thing I'll say is the input from the Afghan community is also absolutely essential. Yama Munir Shubaira. Shubaira, thank you. You know, we've had several conversations, and what you are experiencing in the community is heart-wrenching. And so we have to make sure that we are adaptable to figure out what are the needs of the community that exists, even if we go to meet the needs of the of new Afghans that we become a part of the fabric of our society here in Utah. And also, Utah Muslims specifically, I mean, Luna, you and the team are providing phenomenal leadership in this area. And so we want to make sure that we're out there doing that, finding sources of financial support that is done in close coordination with you and your team. So, Stephen, anything I've missed or that you don't want to add?
I'll just say Miles, you covered it well. To Governor Cox's point, the business community, it's been overwhelming. I mean, usually you have to call to get money, but they're calling me to give me money. So I think that's a good sign. And so to Miles' point, it's really just figuring out how to channel that into the right places. And so, well, that's a process we're going to work out as we go forward. It's been great working with all the different partners, and so we'll continue to have that communication.
And I'll just add, the last thing, if people ask and say, great, where do we send a check? And I said, last thing, World Trade Center Utah should not take any of this money, because we don't have the technical expertise on how to get it and get it to the points of need. And so that's where we'll look to the resettlement agencies for some guidance, and also, Asha, to you and your team for guidance on where do we send the money, and then who is going to be accountable to make sure that money gets to the places they need it most.
A great problem to have.
Yeah.
It's a great problem to have.
Well, it speaks to the fact that this is such a great example of the leavening effect that Utah has on the nation and the world, and how grateful we all are for the leadership that we have here in the state of Senator Fox, who's willing to raise our hand here in the state and say, let's show the nation the best way of rallying a team around solving some of these really challenging issues.
Absolutely, well said. Okay.
Can I add a comment to the accountability and best practices? I think Utah is very fortunate to have two of the best resettlement agencies in the U.S., IRC and USCCB, who are the top performers in the sector, and, you know, receive full compliance in our monitoring. And we have a lot of the systems in place that we can share some of those benchmarks and different things that are required for reporting and documentation and fiscal compliance and all of those pieces, too. So I think that that's a real value that we add here with the two agencies that are represented.
Yep.
That's great. Thanks, Natalie. Okay, any other questions or comments on this basic needs component? Thank you for your work. It's great. Thank you so much. The last group, Luna, you're going to update us on the community support piece.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Casey. I am going to begin by saying I'm not a one-person team. I have extensions going all across the room in every direction. I'm just lucky to have this spot on this table at the moment. So when we talk about Utah housing over 60,000 Muslims in this community, we also understand that different foreign affairs, foreign interactions have direct impact on our communities here in Utah. Afghanistan crisis and the way the governor came in front, making sure that Utah is going to be a welcoming place, has set our hearts on fire of saying, yes, we can. Yes, we will. But it's also, there are different parts. There is a community that already exists here. They have extensions in that country that cannot be cut off. So we have to think about, before the refugees arrive, how do we serve the community that already exists here? What are the situations that they are undergoing? I know that maybe the state government does not have direct impact on it, but we want to get behind the governor when he speaks to the Biden administration or anybody else, saying that apart from award-winning resettlement agencies, you have the entire community, and specifically the Muslim community and the civic organizations right behind you. When you say that you will bring them here, that we all of us do have the big hearts to house them, whether that's through the resettlement agencies or through personal donations and so on. Our organization has been the only Muslim advocacy organizations in the state. We enjoy everybody's support and trust, and we intend keeping that, building on that further. So with that, I think it was Miles' open-heartedness that he asked us when the Afghan crisis broke out, saying, how do we help? How do we step in? And we asked him to help us host the community itself so that they're able to verbalize as to what are the issues as the community stands within Utah. We do have, I'm going to share my time with three more speakers, but what I want to summarize is, through these folks, we understood that getting information about U.S. citizens and allies who are stuck there needs a system which the congressional delegation can help and provide support with. Our organization is getting in front of that, asking for that information, and making sure that it stays in sort of in the center of everybody's attention. We have people stuck there. We have to help them get out there. We want to be able to provide legal expertise as to what are the options for these folks. So offline, I'm once again throwing Miles and Stephen under the bus, saying they're going to help us put together this legal clinic that we are going to do within the next 10 days, so that folks from the community can come in, provide their documentation, and say, are there new categories that have opened up? Or if somebody else is stuck, how do I get them out? And then right there after that, we understand that we have all of you guys taking care of, you know, the medical, the housing, and so on. We want to be the support for all resettlement and refugee organizations providing that cultural connection. We also come at the last step of it, the very first and then the last step. What do refugees do when they come here? They look for their community. They look for a place to worship. They look for friends. And that's where we come in. When we talk about 1 in 3 Muslims having tried to have commit suicide in last year, this is the latest research out of Stanford. We want to be that organization to filter the services that state provides directly to these folks. When we talk about barriers to accessing health issues, across US, Muslims, number one issue is access to health, right? And secondly, security and other issues. There are folks who are coming, helping the troops. There are communities who may not want them to be included. So sort of cultural integration, making happiness index of Utah rise up. Those are the places where we would like to be effective. That's where we would like to be partners with everyone in this room. And I'm going to turn it over to Munir Ahmed first to speak about a couple of things that they want to bring, and then probably Shabaira and Yama, and then bring it back.
Thank you so much, Luna. I think I would let Yama to speak on behalf of staff and community.
First of all, I thanks Luna and Governor Cox. We were really proud when we heard you're among 8 states, and we were bragging actually with other Afghans anywhere else. We were like, okay, that's where we're living. And so we thank you very much, and we were like, that was the motivation that, okay, like when our state's opening their doors, we are welcoming. And one of the great culture of Afghanistan is hospitality. So once we see this and you guys are announced that, you know, we're welcoming them, we gather the community and we see that we need an organized community. So we established United African American Coalition. And the community opened their doors. There was all the partners from IRC, they are coming joining. Sister Luna was a big support and encouragement that bring us all together and see, okay, they mentioned the housing need. So we understand the housing need. We have a list of community that they are welcoming to offering the house first night, third night. And if they get accommodated, they have housing. With our cultural relation, even we need, we don't want to rent a house to a stranger. But they're welcoming families that they're like, they're my family. I can rent them the place. I can have them to stay here. So that's one thing we're working. Another thing is that with the translator, we have list of volunteers on the different needs. With the transportation, we gathers, they were there, Sister Luna and Natalie, and they were all show up over there, Brother Batar. So we have a huge list of people that are offering commitment and service that they are going to help. We do not know that as a business owner in the state of Utah, I know that there's crisis of employer. So we do not have manpower enough for all the industry. So I believe we can help, even though we have great partners and services for many, many years, they're delivering, but I'm pretty sure that we can use as a manpower to help them out. That's another thing. And lots of community concern is that their extended family over there. So one biggest crisis we have right now is that they don't have money, they don't have job, they don't have food, they don't have way of out. And I am working and helping them out to get the money from people here. And I have source over there to give. And I don't want to get in trouble legally that that's money laundering. So that's what I need from you, Governor, to allow me to see what is the legal way of go about it to help those people and help these families. So that's the biggest thing that I do. And I also work with 4 to 6 different organizations that are helping those allies about and 6,000 LS different group of military here have their SIVs, green card holders from different states, so from Mazar, Kabul, and different borders that I assist service for them, literally all night. So we do put them on safe houses. So I need to know that what are the legal eyes, and I want the state to know that these are the services we're offering. So it's not going to be like coming on anywhere illegal. That's why would you do it, or you're not allowed to do. These are the stuff that our organization offering to do. Again, as far as the hotels, coming as a business owner, we know that we lost the outdoor retailer market from Utah a few years because of the crisis of housing. I traveled 50 states in Utah. Right now, you can't find Airbnb or hotel, although these hotels are offering, but you cannot find reasonable hotel or vacancy. And all the trade shows, businesses are going back to normal after COVID. Even they do the offering, but when the time comes, the communities are understanding. I don't know if the business will be available to offer because they're at the moment that they have vacancy. And let Shubhaira speak a little bit so I don't take the whole time. Thank you so much for listening
and
all
so much.
The concern of everybody and showing support to all these upcoming refugees.
Thank you.
I'm going fast so everyone can see. Hi, my name is Shubhaira Manzana. I'm a co-founder of United Afghan American Coalition along with Saeed Yama. And what I wanted to kind of speak about today, the last meeting that we had with some congressional delegates, I kind of spoke about my personal story and where I came from. So I was born in 1998 in Afghanistan. And basically everything that's going on today happened when I was born too. It led to my family fleeing to Pakistan to try to protect themselves, and ended up that Taliban followed us, my family there, and unfortunately murdered my father 1 month before I was born. And why I want to bring up that story, it's not a sob story. The reason is I'm actually one in a million. I got on a flight to come to America as a refugee in 2000. That unfortunately is not the case for many people right now. So I don't want to speak about the trauma, even though it was so great. I was the baby, so I don't remember it. But everyone that's dealing with it right now, I don't want to just refer to those people as refugees, but humans first. So I understand that they have refugee status, but I think we have to understand that they're humans already given an unfortunate situation. And things like this, it's so, I don't want to explain that to you because I know you're all fantastic people that have come here together to try and to do good. But one thing that we have seen in history, whether you have good intentions or not, there's always a disconnect in between people who are wanting to do good and the community. And my personal background is in public health. I've seen so many stories and studies where because of that disconnect, that help wasn't provided. So that's why we started this coalition, to be able to help that disconnect, so that even though I know we have so many amazing organizations, it's not that easily accessible to all these communities. So that's why we're trying to help in that little bridge in between the two. So specifically with translators, as Yama had said, we have a ginormous list of competent translators that are willing to give up their time, as well as so many other needs. And the thing is, I want to be taken seriously. I'm not demanding. Obviously, we're a new organization because of everything that has happened, but we're very serious about it because we're the most passionate about it. It's our own people. It's our brothers and sisters. So that's kind of what I'm asking for, is support in the matter of, I understand all these things are going, all the efforts that we're trying to do. We are professionals, but we're not professionals at everything. Exactly how Yama brought it up, we do need some legal help because we want to make sure we're not getting in trouble for trying to do good. That's where our gap is. We have the legal gap in between our willingness to do good, while organizations such as Catholic Community Services and IRC, they want to do good and everything, but there's still that community gap in between that organization and the people that we know. So all the Afghans that we know here and abroad are contacting us personally, asking for these questions and these help, like help for multiple things. So that's what we're asking for, is to have support in our organization and be treated in a serious way, where I understand we have Utah Muslim Civic League, I understand we have IRC, I understand we have CS, but the problem is it's not being done the right way, and we're trying to make sure it's being done the right way so that all these good intentions are actually followed through. So not to be demeaning or anything like that, I do want to make sure that we're following the right processes and things like that. So I just want to lend out a hand and let you know that we are here. We are hearing our community. We are trying our best to integrate. within this society and all these departments to make sure that we are doing our best to support these upcoming refugees and those individuals back home. Thank you so much.
Yeah. I'm just going to summarize. So the working group, as you can see, has many, many voices from the community and from state and everything. We will continue working with all the partners across the board and make sure that all recommendations come to you in a way that they're actionable and that are they're understandable in the context of the legal framework that state and other agencies that they provide. So our work will continue. We will keep meeting. We will keep you updated. And we also did launch a website today on Afghanistan in terms of the resources that we are providing and so on. Our time is way up.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Very important points, and we appreciate your voices. They're important. And Luna, thank you for bringing up the work of your community and managing all those different perspectives, and it is going to be important to include everybody at the table as we move forward. Thank you so much. Pamela, did you have a quick comment?
As we finish these three groups, I'd like to thank the governor and his chief of staff, John Pierpont, for appointing Nate McDonald to in the leadership position. He's done an incredible job in working all hours of, and just has tried to placate the problems and get together with everybody and respond to everybody. But it really has been fantastic. And others, we'd just like to say thank you to you because he's made the processes much easier. And I would just like to say it was a very wise decision to appoint Nate McDonald. He was the right person for the right job at the right time. So thank you.
Thanks, Kate.
Thank you, Pamela. We do want to hear from our resettlement agencies, so give you some time.
Great. I did just really want to make a comment on the legal tenant. I was in DCS, those have the immigration services, and we by no means can meet the demand right now. So we do have a lot of petitions and filings are already in place, so it would be great to work together to figure out how we can kind of navigate that.
Wonderful. Yeah, we have created a working group with Sister Luna, and you can bring it to all of us, and we're meeting quite often. So we will be including you whatever you need. So it's gonna be good. And thank you for everything you guys do.
Yeah, thanks, sir. But again, we can't build all of the SMEs, so we definitely want to support whatever efforts.
Thank you.
Yeah. First, I just wanted to thank you, Governor Cox, and your administration for again standing up to respond during, you know, one of the world's most worst humanitarian crises that we've seen, and that unfortunately continues to be, and that we know that Qatar will open its arms to those who are most in need. The letter to the White House and your task to bring stakeholders together sends a message to those across the nation and to the world that Utah is a place that has and will continue to welcome refugees. And I have to say the support that we've received from the community, from me, from Pamela, from Stephen, from Asha, from all of your team, Asha, to organize the community right now around these evident needs, this is incredible. And just in our update today, I with the housing piece, like I had a huge sense of relief that came over me that we would have resources to be able to serve the families that are coming. And it's really helped us feel assured that we have that yearly steps in the right direction. So on behalf of the resettlement agency, we truly believe that these are the right steps and that we'll be supported as we welcome these new families. And once again, we've proven that when there is a call to action with those refugee community service providers, that we can mobilize, we can work together, and that we can meet that moment. That I humbly ask that as our efforts continue, that the IRC and CCS continue to be at the table each step along the way as decisions are made, that will impact how resources and services are administered, not only for when refugees arrive from Afghanistan, but the long-term support that they will need. So both agencies, the IRC and CCS and DWS, we have a robust infrastructure that exists that support refugees in Utah. And so working alongside with other community-based youth agencies, ethnic-based organizations, specifically and specifically, we just want to make sure that we can extend that support to our newest neighbors that are coming. So thank you to everyone. I just really am so gracious, so grateful of this mobilization of support.
Thank you, Natalie.
Well, I just a word. echoing everything Natalie said, it does feel great to feel the community support from all aspects of society. So we need that. Our work's really important, and we wouldn't get very far without the support of the entire community. So sincerely, thank you. We're not the only ones that recognize that. A little over a month ago, we successfully completed an audit with the State Department, PRM, who oversees the reception and placement program. And they went on and on about the support that we receive as an agency from the community. And they said that that is one of the most important things that they consider as the State Department in determining where to place refugees and how to allocate their resources. So we as a community have done a good job so far, and that's not to say that we're definitely not perfect. We have room to grow, absolutely. And we have a lot of work ahead of us as well. So we'll continue to work side by side with all of you, and appreciate all of your support. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. We're short on time. We're going over it slow, but this is an important topic. And so I appreciate everybody and speaking up and being here, and want to give the governor some time to kind of wrap things up and talk about next steps. So, Governor?
Yeah, thank you, TC. Again, thanks to everyone. I'm just really blown away by the response and how quickly you've all come together and all the different partnerships. And so I've got some notes here, and all within such a short amount of time, as Pamela mentioned. So I just want to thank the landlord community and everybody who's been so responsive there. The hotel groups that are willing to step up. So we have the recommendations from the work group. We'll continue to pursue the ERA 2 funding. That's important. You know, it is one of those things too where we have a lot of money right now because of COVID, and honestly more than we have applications. So this is I think a great way. We'll ask forgiveness later, and we'll get this taken care of. So. And as we start to get more of the clarifying information on timelines and arrivals, these work groups, thank you again, the monetary and basic needs groups, you know, you're going to meet to pool resources and begin addressing those gaps in services. DWS, we've got to work on this employment piece. We know how important that is. The good news is there's never been a better time in the history of the state of Utah to find a job. Right now I could walk out on the street and just flag people down, and we'd have 100 jobs ready to go right
more,
now.
Maybe more than that.
Just this week I had somebody say, we need to incentivize more people to come to Utah. So this is great. We'll have these people. So, I want to thank Pamela and the medical work group for their efforts to coordinate this medical and mental health care. So important. I just pulled up that study. I hadn't seen that study yet from Stanford. Very, very troubling and I think important. We've worked on, it just happens to be Suicide Prevention Week as well. And so we're focused on groups with higher suicide rates. First, I realized that the Muslim community is one of those groups, and that certainly needs to be a focus for us as well. So thank you. Very, very important. And I want to thank the United African American Coalition and the great work that you're doing. It is so important. Community matters to people, and getting this right, we want them to feel welcome here in Utah, and I think they'll feel that from people, but nothing says welcome. I've been in strange lands with different people, and when you see someone have that connection, it makes a difference. And so thank you for the role that you're filling and those gaps that you're working through. We'll need your expertise to help there. And of course, our resettlement agencies, We are so lucky to have you guys. Again, we take for granted having the best in the country. We're sorry we take you for granted, but we please know we stand ready to help. And of course, the Refugee Services Office and Asha, who's just honored. You talk business, is a very important person. You haven't seen that issue, it's how they're coming out. So we appreciate Asha and everybody's working so hard. We'll continue to provide updates to all of you. So I think everybody knows what they're doing. You're a lot better at this than I am, and we can't thank you enough. We just need to get our people, our humans, our Afghan brothers and sisters here. We can't wait. So we'll be ready.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you, Governor. Well said. I just can't do that. I mean, it's so inspiring. So well said, Governor. Thank you, everybody, for coming today. I know our time is short. If you have future comments or concerns, you can reach out to Asha, myself, Nate. So we also have an email address for those that are online, refugeecenter@utah.gov. We would be glad to take public comment there. Thank you to everybody that joined virtually. This is the Utah Way. We see people rally, come up with housing solutions. It is one of our biggest, toughest issues right now. So to have housing solutions on the table within 1 week, we are going to have a welcoming and safe place for these arrivals. And thank you, Azeem, for coming. We wish you the best of luck. You have a whole team of support here. You can see that as your family comes and as we have more of our Afghan brothers and sisters come, we will have our own spread open wide and solve these problems together. So thank you, everybody, for coming. And with that, we will adjourn. Thank you.
Thank you. Can I say something? Yeah. Sure. Yeah. If I didn't have the table.